Raleigh, North Carolina. It's The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to the show Lost on ABC. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to The Lost Podcast with Jay and Jack. My name is Jay.
I'm Jack.
And welcome to the Monday edition of The Lost Podcast. And folks, actually, I have a very special edition of the Monday edition of
I'm going to be on here the whole time.
The whole time Jack is going to be on this episode.
Yes, I'm not leaving for a second.
No, actually, we have Jorge Garcia actually took some time out of his day today to actually do an interview with us to talk about his episode that just aired, the season premiere, the beginning of the end. And we
gave
actually...
Some
good information, I think, on the
no spoiler
episode.
Stuff. No,
not spoilery, but
spoilers compared. Well, some insight on what happened on that episode.
Exactly. Inside, how they did things, maybe scenes that were cut, and a lot of fun stuff. So it's going to actually take the place of Lost in Review because we kind of review the episode with Jorge, and we're going to have screen caps from Easter eggs from the show and talking about stuff like that. So we're very excited to present to you our interview with Jorge Garcia. My close personal bestest friend.
Yes.
Didn't
he actually say at the end, please stop bothering me?
Yeah, I think so.
He says
something like that.
Will you stop stalking me?
Yeah, seriously. I just want to be able to go hang out with Ralph and Ben without you knocking on the door. Can I come in?
Yeah, he actually did say that. No, if you read between the lines,
is that what it says?
I think he was saying that.
Okay. But we're very excited to give you guys the Jorge interview. So we're going to actually have that first. Then we have some next on Lost.
TV show?
Actually, John is actually sick today. He can't even talk. So we're just going to have a short next on Lost, just basically setting up the episode titles. Also, we have a lot of great listener feedback from the last episode, the beginning of the end. And we're going to have our listener theory of the week. First one in forever.
Yeah, I forgot we're even doing it.
I know. So
you said, hey, you got to come up with a listener theory of the week. I said, what?
Not you don't have to
come up. Know, but you said, hey, did you hear? I'm like going, I just zoning out.
Yeah. Out of shape, podcasting shape. But before we get into anything, if you would like to buy a Jay and Jack t-shirt and our sweater, you can click the link right now in the AAC feed.
And who wouldn't?
Or check shopsaminate.com for our store, or check out jayandjack.com, and there's a link on the sidebar. Yes. Also, for our Wizard Media survey, it's been going really well. You can click that link right now in the AAC feed, or you can check out jayandjack.com for also a link in the sidebar. You see the little Wizard Media logo. It says, please take this survey.
Right.
So, that's about it.
Okay.
Now let's actually get into our interview, special interview with Jorge Garcia. Let's go to it right now.
Do it.
Here we go. Actually, I should have said go, but oh well. All right.
You don't have to do the. They don't. You know how they do on like radio or TV where they don't count the last numbers.
Do they do it on radio too? Do they not count the last numbers? Or we just assume the numbers are said? You and the one?
I've never actually been on any radio show that kind of actually did that. And we're going live in three. Well, I don't know. No, because they kind of do, but it's a lot more relaxed, a lot more low key. They're like, okay, you're on in 5 seconds. And then they're like putting on their headphones, and then basically it's a big red light that turns on in the room that tells them that they're on again.
What we need is big.
We don't have that cool big red light technology.
We got to get the red light.
That's what you got to do.
All right.
Then we make it.
Yeah, you put a big red light there and a big red light outside of whatever room you're in. So it's
Oh, like we're on air? That'd be sweet.
No,
we keep our family quiet.
Or when we're shooting Lost, first there's a big siren. There's like a. And then the light comes on. So that.
That's kind of scary.
It's a smoke monster sounding, eh?
Make sure everyone, so there's no hammering in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Does that happen ever? Like somebody just doing something like that and you have to shoot the whole scene over again?
Oh, yeah, all the time. There's like different types of noise. Or they have to yell.
Or a plane goes over or something.
They yell at people to hold the work. Yeah, we don't get as many planes in the sky as we get boats in the water as far as in the background.
All right, hello and welcome to the Lost Podcast, and we have the wonderful, amazing Jorge Garcia with us today. Cool. Hi, Jorge.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, good. Thank you for actually coming on the show and actually talking to us after your amazing season. premiere episode. It was great. Just want to say an amazing job.
It was a great job.
Thanks. I mean, yeah, I've gotten a lot of really amazing feedback from people about it.
Yeah, and
our listeners are saying you should win an Emmy.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think it was Emmy worthy, and our fans are also saying how much they enjoyed that it wasn't like a Jack season opener. It was nice to actually have a different character kind of start out the season.
Cool.
And I think it was really nice.
Thanks.
So we're gonna have you here for a little bit. Just ask you a couple questions, like about you know, your episode, maybe some stuff that you can tell us and fill us in on.
Sure.
Cool information.
Give a little extra.
Yeah. Maybe the inside scoop.
Yeah. Sure. What's actually going on? Because I'm confused.
Everyone's confused. It's yeah. There's they definitely are aiming for something, and it's gives you a good taste of the kind of scripts that like episodes that we have up ahead, where it's just the anticipation as to what's going to happen next, because like there's like it feels like there's a pace behind it that it's very exciting, and we were just kind of like tearing open the envelopes with the new script deliveries every time we got them to find out what was going to happen next and whose story was going to cover and who else is on the Oceanic Six and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's great. I just think it really set up a really great just a great rest of the, I guess, these three seasons, and hopefully kind of follows the same kind of thing, because it was so just out of left field, and it makes us want to guess.
Well, it's new.
It just feels like as fresh as the first season was on trying to figure out what's going on.
That's what we feel too, yeah.
Yeah. So a couple of things. Is there, I mean, anything from what we saw on the actual show, was there anything that was actually different in the production, or maybe that was taken out or anything like that?
Well, sure.
What we saw on Thursday?
Quite a bit. Obviously, there's always just editing kind of things done, and like, you know, you never know. That's part of why, especially when it's your episode, you're always nervous watching it, because, you know, you're like, well, you know, I don't know what take they're going to use, and I don't know what parts of the dialogue get cut out, and sometimes that even though kind of you know, give the story a little bit of a goose, or kind of do little things and kind of change certain things that they might be like, actually, this is going to go in this direction now a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's been, you know, there's some really good surprises, which is good, you know, just for me watching it to get things that I didn't see. Like, I guess a big one was that when I get interrogated in the police station and the window turns to water. And in the script, it just says it's water and fish swimming. And then as far as the guy in the hoodie who then puts his hand up and the window breaks, that wasn't actually in the script. So, yeah, I don't know if that's something that they wanted to add just to kind of give it a little more thrilling drama, or it's something they knew was going to happen and it'd be better to leave it out of the script, because you know, cause like, you know, the way that the final scene in this episode in season three also wasn't in the script. It was actually something we were told about. So, you know, that could have also been part of it as well. And
what
it
do
was,
you think works better for like that, if you knew it or didn't know, if there was, you know, a shadowy object who now people think is Charlie, kind of has that figure.
It's meant to represent Charlie. And and I also found out when I was talking to Kristen at E! Online that he actually has something written on his hand as well.
Yeah, he does. He says,
"Listen to me."
No.
Help them. They need you. Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
And so that was cool and exciting. And when I went back and watched it, I was watching in slow motion to see if I could see it myself. And as far as for the actor, it's like, how much higher do you want my eyebrows to go, really? I mean,
water pouring in a room isn't enough.
Yeah, right. It already looks like the window is turned to an aquarium of fish. I mean, that's pretty shocking as it is. Granted, Charlie swimming in that aquarium would be a big deal. I mean, I think it still works as to what we had, and that just, it's, you know, it's like the way, it's like adding the Dharma symbol on the shark. It's just kind of, you know, it's just kind of a little extra something.
So as an actor, for your reactions, it's not really warranted to actually have that. You still kind of get the same effect, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's something I didn't know was coming. It's not even that they essentially, like, it was something that I knew that there was going to be a detail that was going to come later. Because, like, there's a lot of times there's stuff that we don't know. And in a sense where it's like, it's the classic Matt telling the story about the drink and the pilot, where he's like, I don't need to know why this drink is so important. I just need to know how it is very important, you know? And that's kind of what you do as an actor. You know, you just got to, like, you know, whether you know what the reasons for backstory. There's a lot of times, a lot of actors get really caught up in their character's biography and their backstory. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's cool for those actors that, you know, can use it and it actually shows up in the performance. But other times it's just like, you know, well, just how does that translate to this scene right now? And like, just like, well, I know that I'm going to freak out because the wind is going to turn to water and then the water is going to be rushing in. And I don't want to get wet for some reason, and so it's like, okay, and that's enough.
That's good enough. Okay, all right.
Makes sense.
Actually, quick, while we're on that subject, people have been saying the no smoking on the wall is a reference to the smoke monster. What is your feeling on that, or is it just a reference to that it's in LA and
I don't think it's something that they specifically said, let's put no smoking because of the smoke monster. I think
would be cool.
They were just trying to set up an interior interrogation scene. I don't know if in the LAPD rooms like that, if they actually have a no smoking sign.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of it's killing the cliche of the classic interrogation scene. Where there's always someone with a cigarette and it's always smoky and it's lit really it's like there's that one hanging lamp over the guy's head about it. And this is how we do it in California, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
You want a coffee?
It was funny because like I went to Milwaukee and I had forgotten what it's like to go to a restaurant where they smoke.
Yeah. I know, it was like when we moved here to North Carolina.
Yeah, when they first moved here, they said, you want smoky or non-smoking? I go, what?
And it doesn't do anything being in the non-smoking section, because sometimes you can be right next to someone's cigarette, even though you're in the non-smoking section.
Exactly.
That happened to us yesterday at Applebee's. There was only table was right next to non-smoking, and we came home and felt like we had been smoking.
They got to do one of those non-smoking sections like they do in casinos, where it's like a whole separate room with like...
Yeah.
Yes.
Or like an airport. Airport. It's like your own vacuum.
Right.
And it's all, you walk by and it's all foggy.
But yeah, okay. So that's pretty cool about the interrogation stuff. Anything else? Like, what about like the Jacob's Cabin scene?
Exactly. The Jacob's Cabin scene, there was, when we shot the guy in the chair, we did a version of the guy in the chair where I was sitting in the chair.
Oh, wow. Oh.
In my Santa Rosa robe and slippers.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So, what do you think that means then?
Was it like a mirror? Really know. I mean, they're exactly. Well, that's what, because I knew. I remember when a lot of people saw the guy who was playing Jacob in the other time we saw Jacob rocking in the chair. Mm-hmm. People thought he kind of had a younger, hairier lock quality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I wasn't sure if Jacob
was following that
was
vein.
Kind of represented by, you know, your dark side or whatever, mm-hmm. or something along those lines. Like, if Jacob was something that you put there yourself. And then when I went to loop the scene and I saw that it was John Terry and... the other thing they did that was interesting is because they would shoot it and they would shoot it really well lit and they would shoot it poorly lit. And then they'd even darken it more in post because the version that I had seen when I was looping it, because I had to add extra breaths of, you know, when you see him, I had breaths of me breathing heavily from running through the jungle as I'm looking through the window. When we were shooting that, he was really well lit by the fire. and then they made him really dark where you could only see his sneakers almost.
Yeah, sneakers.
Later. What I think that changes, though, is it kind of takes the fact that Jacob's not necessarily something that you put there yourself, just based on the fact that when did Hurley ever meet Jack's dad?
Yeah.
So how would exactly. he know what Jack's dad would look like? So, it, yeah. you know, that is not necessarily a figment of Hurley's imagination as opposed to other things that might be. Although I kind of liked it when it was Hurley sitting in the chair because it was very Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
When, yeah.
Yeah. Slices off Darth Vader's head.
Yeah. Well, that's also kind of like reminded me when Charlie visits Hurley and... And I thought it'd be fun for moments like that where Charlie would resurface in the Obi-Wan Kenobi form and just be like, you know, you have
like
to do this.
Like a blue aura about him.
Yeah. That'd be great. Stretch out your feelings. You know, he keeps showing up in places and offering guidance.
That would have been great. Now, there was another eye that popped up. Was there an actor there playing that role, too? Or can you say? Because there was John Terry, Christian Shepherd there, and there was, like, another person, his eye popped out.
Right.
Was there an actor playing that? Or was that even there when you told
me? There was an actor there playing that.
Is it an actor we know, or is it somebody different?
No, it's not. It's not a cast member.
Because people are thinking it's Locke. That's that guy that popped up.
When I first saw it, I go... I thought it was Desmond. I don't know why, but I thought Desmond. Why would he be in the cabin? But I watched it again. I said, well, probably not Desmond.
No. But people are thinking it's Locke, so it wasn't Terry O'Quinn
playing
that
person? It
was
not Terry O'Quinn.
Okay.
And it also wasn't Ian Cusack either.
Okay.
So you can put those to rest. Okay.
That's
but,
cool.
You know, you never know how, you know...
Yeah, exactly.
How seeds get planted and then... How they flourish later, it could you know it could very well be something else or that was just like just something that they put in there to have this other guy pop up real close and that's what sends Hurley flying back and
yeah exactly
on the ground.
That was just an insane scene that whole thing and they turned around it was right there and it was just crazy. Your opinion, do you think? Oh, okay.
Go ahead. What? No, what?
Just saying, in your opinion, do you think it's like Hurley just having visions, or do you think it was actually there? Because with Hurley, he's had these visions before where, you know, he saw Dave on the
island. Like you said, with Christian Shepherd, how would he know?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, how would he know that was him?
He's never seen him.
Does that prove it?
Right.
Yeah.
Also, the moving cabin.
They do that. Did it actually have a cabin in two different places, or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's basically exactly what they did. Or they built two, maybe.
Yeah.
They were shot. They weren't all shot on the same day. It's like, you know, one day you shoot me approaching the cabin, and then the other day you shoot me running into the cabin again. They did a version, I think, originally.
We already talked about, like, the actors, and you were in there and all that stuff.
You're talking about different locations of the cabin.
You were talking about
hold on a second. Let me grab that script, and I'll read you how it was written.
Okay.
I think there was, like, an extra seeing of the cabin in the original version.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hold on. Like, instead of, like, two cabins, I think there might have been three.
Oh, wow.
This makes great podcasting, by the way.
It does. It's great.
Hello, Hugo. Okay. Oh, another thing that was in the script was there's a little more done with the ash line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you remember the ash line?
Oh, because he didn't seem to find one.
Right.
When he was going.
There was like moments with the ash line. They had a moment. He kneels down at the ash line. He dips his finger.
Oh, really?
Into the ash line, and he picks it up, and it's almost like he's about to taste it when the door starts opening.
Oh, wow.
And then he says, uh-oh. And then, no, the light comes on inside the cabin.
Yeah.
And he says, uh-oh. Basically, it was like, I think I run from the cabin originally, and I actually run towards the other cabin. It wasn't like the thing of, I think, turning around and being surprised that the cabin's in front of me.
Yeah.
It was, I run, and then, whoa, there's a cabin in front of me.
Oh, wow. So there's no, like, turning around, just like you're running, and then it's in front of you?
Yeah, and then you stop, and then you turn around again, and you realize that the cabin's not there. And this kind of did it where I was looking behind me and then turn around. I think it gave him that turning gave him that step to have the, you know, the abrupt stop. Because if I was running, because it was, there was no surprise to the fact that the cabin was directly in front of me, because the second cabin was in an open field, I think.
Yeah.
And so they had to do something to kind of like make it so then I turn around and the cabin just appeared out of nowhere. So
it was like more,
it wasn't
shocking.
There in the field when I had landed. Mm-hmm. By the way, that open field is the field where the pallet was dropped.
Oh, really? Oh.
I believe that's the same pallet from Dave.
That's interesting.
Huh.
I believe.
That's,
I mean, they're
cool.
All hay. I'm thinking that's the same open clearing.
Yeah,
cause,
yeah.
Because there's only so many open like clearings like that we can choose.
Yeah, open
from.
Fields. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I know when I walked, when you first walk up and you see the broken glass, I swear it looks like the Dharma, like a broken Dharma logo.
I actually got screen caps of it. It does kind of look like a broken Dharma logo, but I think it's just like a, I don't know, slight thing. I don't know.
Could they have done it on purpose? Maybe
we'll put it in Lost in Review and people.
Because Jay's been arguing with me. I said, look at it. It looks just like a broken. Yeah.
Is there any like scenes that you shot like dialogue wise that changed, that they just changed for maybe time, or maybe wanted to change the feel of it or anything like that?
A little. I mean, there's just small, some things were just a little different. The big moment when the whole group gets reunited.
Yeah.
The early speech had a few, like I'm not listening to you to Jack. Originally was followed by "and I'm not listening to you" to Locke as well.
Oh wow!
But I just think it gave it a little more oomph with the whole, you know, because Hurley Jack has been pretty solid for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's a big deal if they just kind of end it, leave it at that, and it also
goes for more dramatic effect.
Yeah, and enhances the riff that, you know, is still there when they're playing basketball later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even think about that, how big a deal that was, because since the beginning of the show, there's always been that tight bond between Hurley and
Jack. Well, you saw how Jack's face, he was hurt.
Yeah. It was a big blow to Jack.
Yeah. And
but it just shows, like, the gravity of, you know, Charlie and what happened and what he did and everything. How was it filming those scenes with Emily DeRaven and having to show that emotion, because it was insane. I mean, our whole family was crying. I'm sure a lot of people were crying. How was it to film those scenes?
That was it took 3 days to shoot that.
Really? Wow. 3 days?
Actually, technically 4, I think, now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we would work up to the rain. And then we had the rain stuff, because like rain, because if you have to, when it's raining, then people have to change clothes, stuff like that. So you want to do all this stuff dry. And we had to, and it's just, it was hard. It was a lot of work that we had to come back on Saturday to finish working, to shooting it. And, and then, there was when we shot it all, and just kind of like, just trying, you doing the scene over and over again, and then it comes to your close up where you want to at least deliver the goods. It's a bit of work. Like I always say, it's not construction, but it's getting closer. And
just the emotional toll it must take to kind of have to do that.
I think that's a Randy Newman line about writing songs. And then finding out that when they were cutting together, they wanted like some extreme close ups of things and certain, and they had a couple extra lines to have us do, like a line for me and a line for Emily. So basically we had to go back there and recreate the whole emotional moment.
Oh wow!
Just, you know, out of nowhere, and then do and shoot those, you know, at the same level of grief and all that stuff. So yeah, that's a little work, but you know, that's
you guys pulled it off. Definitely.
Do you find that harder to do than a comedy scene, a comedic scene?
It has to be, right?
I know a lot of actors say it's easier to do a sad scene than to deliver the comic, the one liner.
There is the punchline. Well. Yeah, but the thing is, being funny is something that I really enjoy and pride myself in, and it's something that, and it's just something that I've always paid attention to. And so, I mean, as far as it for me as an actor developing, when I was like going through training and all that stuff, the emotional stuff was harder for me, because I cover it up in life so much, and that's basically a big thing you learn as an actor is how to blow that cover off so that it's there, and then once you're at that point, then you have to cover it up again because you're playing real people.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because you know a lot of actors want to just go, you know, start bawling, and you know, show, look at me, I can cry, but. Human beings have this different quality. Like, there's a woman who was telling some tragic story on like a TV news about her daughter, and she kept saying that she wasn't going to cry as she told the story of what happened to her daughter, but the whole time tears are coming down her eyes, and she keeps saying, I'm not going to cry, and then this thing happened, I'm not going to cry, and this thing happened, and that thing happened, and says, I'm not going to cry, and then the TV reporter says, but you are crying. And then she's just like, yeah, well. And I just thought that is humanity right there. You know, things like that. That's, I think, it's important in...
Doesn't actually, like, analyze human nature then?
Yeah, well, that's our job, is to observe people.
Yeah.
And then kind of deliver it in another way to the public. And so I learned very quickly that we all have those emotions in us, raring to go when you need them, and you just have to, you know, allow them to surface to where you want it. Like I was pretty happy with that scene. I was especially happy with that one magic tear too.
Yeah.
when I'm doing the speech about Charlie, and there's that one eye is just swelling up and welling up, and it's just you're waiting for the tear to drop, and then it comes. I was really proud of that, if I could do say so.
It was great.
It worked. It really worked really well. Well, your facial expressions worked. I mean, the whole scene worked. It was great.
Because the whole time, it was Hurley. He was like kind of doing that, the whole kind of trying to stay strong, not trying to kind of give in to how sad it was.
Thanks.
And then finally, at that moment, it finally kind of, you know, he let go of it.
Thanks.
And, I could totally see it, and it was just... I think there wasn't a dry eye in any room.
Yeah, well, there's also it's true. There's a classic story about someone. There was some scene that someone asked De Niro like what he was thinking in a certain scene, and he's like, "You don't want to know what I'm thinking," because it's never gonna be what you need, you know.
Yeah,
it's not, the actor's not required to be having the thoughts of the character, And there's other ways that you can also get a little technical help to, you know, it's like you can be showing the grief but be completely dry. That was one of the things, actually shooting that scene in one of the nights, I was dry. I was crying, I was emotional and everything.
Yeah.
But the waterworks weren't coming. And then when that happens, they can also help you with that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all... It all depends. Sometimes you run out of tears when you've been doing
There's only so many you have.
When you've been doing it all night long.
Yeah, yeah. It was a great scene. Kind of changing the subject, Hurley and his painting at Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
Can you like give us some insight on that, or?
Well, what do you think it means?
Well, Jack had an idea.
Well, I was thinking, because the one scene where he's with the guy, the lawyer, he's the lawyer offers him a better place to stay, and he says, we can have a view of the ocean. And Hurley says, no ocean. I don't want to see the ocean anymore. So I was thinking maybe we're overanalyzing it and saying, well, maybe the picture was just the opposite of what the ocean is. Cold, igloo.
So maybe, where Hurley wants to be.
So where Hurley wants to be, he doesn't want to think about the ocean. He's thinking cold. He wants to forget his time on the island, basically.
Well, you recall the ice station thing at the end of season
two? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Well, actually, Jack is completely right. And I was just trying to think what was the opposite of an island. I used the exact same scene to give me the information, and I thought, what's the furthest he can get away from a tropical island? And so I drew the igloo. Yeah,
because we've had a lot of emails and phone calls saying, oh, that's what it meant, and I just told Jay, I said maybe it's the opposite, maybe it's just something that's. Maybe we're putting too much into
trying
it.
Trying to get that's his happy place.
Yeah, well, I wasn't told what to paint. I was just I just had to be painting in the scene, and I mean, just as the scene progressed, it became a picture, and Jack dug it, and Jack's, you know, he does painting himself, and that Jack Bender I'm talking about, he wanted to do an over shoulder of the painting I was painting.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And now it's like this big last Easter egg where people are analyzing it. So do you think it's kind of cool? Like, you know, you're painting it now.
Good. That's
We got at least 30 emails. People believe it's something else.
Know, anything that keeps people talking.
Yeah.
Let's see. A couple more. Just a couple quick things, I guess. How'd you like working with Dominic Monaghan again? Did you think because you weren't going to work with him again, but now you got to do it in that one scene? Did you like be able to go back and have that kind of Charlie Hurley time again?
Oh yeah, for sure. I was really happy when I saw his name in the front of the script, and and just like knowing he was going to be coming around again, and just kind of spending the day there, and you know, just you know, kind of. Playing Scrabble on the trio and all that stuff that we've been doing.
Yeah, that's cool. I hope he comes back more.
Because that's what.
How do you guys like the way people look when they come back after a while? Like Ian Somerhalder, when he was gone and then he came back to do the show, and then he'd look a little different and stuff like that.
I didn't mind Dominic because it was like he came back, but he was like, I guess, dead. So he could come back as like whatever he wants to be.
Yeah,
right?
That was my that's what has become the talk. Like his hair is a little shorter, I think, Dom's. Ian came back, his hair was kind of long, so they had to like fit him, kind of change him around a little bit, and hair and makeup, they just kind of look at him and be like, well. Mainly hair, because it's usually hair that's the big thing that's different, and
especially with those diamond lines guys.
And hair is what we use to represent changes in time on our show, because you know, it's true. One something that happened before, you need a different wig than something that happened after,
or a beard,
or my hair, they just find ways to tie it back, or.
Yeah,
or they pick.
Your hair was like insanely long. It seemed like in. And the flash forward.
Yeah, they tried to straighten it as much as they could and make it kind of long.
Oh, really?
And when they do flashbacks, they put bobby pins all along the back of it to lift it up so it doesn't hang low. And so they just kind of start going. They start having this theory. Says, well, this is kind of like his the hair he has in heaven. You know, it's like, you know, like in heaven you get your ideal person. And like Ian won a little longer hair in heaven.
So in heaven, you get your hair back.
Yeah, there you go.
So that would be good for me. I can't wait.
So the Charlie we're seeing is the Charlie way he prefers.
That's right, because they say everything you lose, you'll get back in heaven.
Wow.
So when you get to heaven.
There's something to look forward to.
I'm ready to go now.
Get a lot of wallets and loose change. Tons of keys.
There's my car keys.
Sunglasses.
A lot of socks, but only one half of the pair of socks.
Yeah,
a lot of single socks with no pairs.
I really did enjoy the Charlie, and I hope they like it. There's more of that, like in your future flash forwards. Hopefully, you get more future flash forwards. That there's kind of more of the ghost Charlie.
Well, that's what upset.
Kind of your Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like,
that's what upset me most of all when they killed off Charlie. Not I loved his character, but the way you two worked together, I just loved the way you guys played off each other. And I said that was I thought that was gonna bug me.
Yeah, someone sent me a really cool screen cap of me and Charlie next to each other, and it's a very cute like shot of the two of us where, like, I'm like. It looks like I have my hands full and I'm looking up at the sky and he's got his hands on his head. It's a really cool little thing. I think I'll send that to you and you can put it up on that.
Okay, yeah, I'll put it up right now. Yeah.
The Hurley Charlie camaraderie is, you know, something that's gonna be missed, and that was kind of a special thing in the show. And when we shot that last scene between Hurley and Charlie, not knowing that he was coming back for episode one, but that scene when he's getting on the boat and he tells Hurley, you know, you can't come with him. You know, we were just sitting there like, well, it's end of an era.
I know. And that's what was kind of, it was nice that he was back in episode. You guys were both back in episode one together.
Yeah, it was fun to shoot.
In the scene where he slaps you, did he really slap you, or was that just the magic of television?
I think he slapped me.
Okay. How many takes?
I don't know how many takes.
However many
I think
took,
he slapped me two or three times. Like, they might do a few real slaps and a few, and then after a while says, okay, we can fake the slap now. Sometimes, you know, just being slapped does make you act better.
Really?
To react to a slap.
Yeah, it's true.
But, you know, it's kind of a payback, I think, because when I was having him to snap out of it, when we were, he was laying on the beach when we were going to go get the van working, I smacked him a few times. So
that is true. I remember
what,
that.
What goes around comes around.
Yeah, it was payback, I guess.
Yeah.
One last question that I have is questions kind of going around. Did Hurley have his money when he was back in the Flash Forward? Like anything that you got from your script or anything, did anything kind of hint to that? Or was it assumed that he did? Or did you not really know?
I really don't know. I mean, I believe he, from what I've gotten from that episode and I'll even venture to say other episodes, he does have the golden pass like everyone else got, it looks like.
Okay.
You know, because Jack mentions golden pass and to Kate, and he says that we got,
Yeah,
and so I believe the golden pass is there, but there I didn't get any evidence as to whether or not he actually had
his wealth that he had
a
before.
Lot of money, right? I just know on the island he was assuming it was all gone.
Okay,
I like this new season's kind of cool too. Just like because basically the way it sets up that there's a part where the forwards and the presence have to meet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yet the forwards still have to go forward too, because there's a general assumption that everyone who's gone off the island will be seeing the island again as well. Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of ground to cover, and we know that there's now a limited time to how long it's going to take to get there. So definitely feels like everything's going to be ramping.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I just want to say an amazing episode. It was great. I think pound for pound, my favorite season premiere.
Yeah, it was.
That's nice.
Because the pace started and it just didn't stop. Like, it kept going. It took the pace from the season finale and it still had that same pace going straight into like the season premiere. It was just like I still felt tense and on the edge of my seat.
Because I said I wasn't sure how I was going to like these flash forwards. I go, I don't know if I'm going to like this, but once I loved it. It was great.
Yeah.
There's good ones in store too. I can't wait to see if there's some there's a few coming up real soon, and Yeah, there's some. I can't tell you who it is because I don't want to give away who I know is
in
the group.
Yeah, we understand. Yeah.
But there's one that I'm really dying to see, and it's going to be pretty exciting.
Wow, sounds pretty good. Can't wait to see that. All right, so thank you, Jorge, for stopping by with us today and kind of giving us some inside info on your episode and what's going on in season four. And I know Jack and I are excited. Our listeners are excited. The fans out there are excited. And we can't wait to see, you know, what's coming in the future.
Cool. Thank you.
So, yeah. So, thanks.
Yeah, great job.
Yes. Thanks for coming. I
appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Bye. All right. So, that was our interview with Jorge Garcia. Once again, Jorge, thank you for taking time of your day. That was really just too awesome.
Really appreciate it.
And for everything you always do for us. Yeah. Just thank you. Now, Jack, are you ready to get into some Next on Lost?
Yep. The TV show.
All right. Here we go.
Next on Lost, the TV show. Maybe it's next week, maybe it's in a couple days. Next on Lost.
All right, it's Next on Lost time.
I wasn't ready for the music.
Oh, really? I'm sorry.
I blew my eardrums out.
No, you're old anyway. You're not going to have much longer as it is.
Thanks.
Next episode,
I'll go get my eardrums back in heaven.
This Thursday is Confirmed Dead. It's the second episode of season four of Lost and is scheduled to be broadcast on February 7th, 2008. The survivors begin to question their intentions of their supposed rescuers when four strangers arrive on the island.
Hmm. So, who's the confirmed dead? I guess Naomi.
Yes.
Right.
And your face. Okay. Oh, also, we don't know who the flashback is specifically yet. It is written by Drew Goddard and Brian K. Vaughn and will be directed by Stephen Williams.
All right.
So that's what we look forward to.
I'm ready.
And hopefully it'll just go pick up right where we left off last episode.
I hope so. That'd be a good
yes.
thing.
Yeah. All right. So that's Next on Lost.
The TV show.
Too spoilery because we don't have John's segment.
Yeah.
So for those who don't like spoilers, hey, it's good for you.
Perfect. Yeah.
All right, Jack, ready to get into some listener feedback. We got a lot to get into.
I say we do it.
All right. Here we go.
Listener feedback.
All right, it's listener feedback time. Let's get in the first set of calls here and reactions to, well, not reactions, but actual theories and comments on the beginning of the end. Let's get in the first set here with Andy, Dennis from Massachusetts, and Doug. You ready?
Yep.
All right, here we go.
Hey, Jane Jack. It's Andy from Indiana. I recognize one loose end in the season premiere. And it's really, really bothering me. But how did Locke know about Charlie when he found Hugo in the woods after Jacob's cabin? Like, was he spying? Was he sneaking behind the whole group of Sawyer and Saeed and them and heard them oversay it? Or did he somehow magically transport to the beach from the radio tower? I mean, I don't know. It kind of leaves some impression as, like, Locke dead, or is he some ghost or some type of incarnation like Echo's brother is? And because I can't remember right now, but I didn't really see any blood on his shirt or the hole from where Ben shot him, but I wasn't really looking for it, so I don't know. I really like Locke as a human, you know? So, I don't know what is going on.
Hey, Jay and Jack. This is Dennis from Mass. Just calling after listening to your late Thursday podcast after the season premiere. Thought it was a fantastic episode. I think Jorge deserves an Emmy nod for this one. I'm embarrassed to say this, but this is a wardrobe-inspired question. I noticed that Rousseau's clothing and the clothing that Naomi was wearing was fairly similar, and I'm almost wondering if Russo's been lying, but not about having been an other in the past, but maybe he's the last survivor of the last attempt by the folks on the SS Not Penny's boat to find the island. I'm wondering if there's going to be some upcoming conflict as a result of everybody making that connection. I'm also wondering a little bit why, when they sent their second person onto the island, they had him parachute in from the helicopter rather than just landing the helicopter directly. But I'm sure we'll find that out soon enough. That's it. Enjoyed the podcast today.
Hey, Jay and Jack. This is Doug in Virginia. I just wanted to comment on the beginning of the end. I thought it was a really cool episode. But the one thing specifically that I think was really great, I liked the fact that it was a Hurley episode, like you said. But I think that the producers have done something really smart. And that is they've set up the fact that with Hurley, from now on, we're going to have no idea whether what he is seeing is true or false. You know, when he was in the police station, he saw that that vision of the guy in the water, and that seemed obviously a hallucination at the time, and so we kind of discounted it. And then, you know, later on the island, he saw Jacob's cabin, and it certainly seemed real. You know, he walked up there and touched things and so forth, and so we thought it was real. And then later on, he saw it again, and it disappeared after a while, and so we thought, maybe it wasn't real. So we're not sure. And then, of course, when he encountered Charlie for the second time on the lawn there of the mental institution, the other guy said, there's a guy staring at you over there, so he seems real. But then Hurley shuts his eyes and says, you know, you're not real, and Charlie goes away, so he seems not real. So I think what the producers have done is set us up for never really knowing what's true or false when it comes to Hurley. And I think that's going to play a big part in the rest of the show. So I hope you guys have a good day. Thanks for your show. Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Thank you for those calls.
Yeah, I agree with Doug there.
What?
We're not going to know if Hurley is actually seeing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that is great, though.
Even though Hurley told us a few things.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's true.
Yeah.
As far as Dennis, Russo, and Naomi wearing the same clothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know you can't. I'm telling you right now, you can't trust
them. You can't trust them? Is that why? Because they have the same clothing?
Exactly.
All right.
They shop at the same store. They got to be working together.
They shop at Evil People Anonymous.
Exactly. And, why wouldn't the helicopter land? Maybe you can't land it at night because you can't see.
Yeah.
There's only certain spots in the island.
It's like, safe. I mean, if you can't see and there's all the trees and stuff.
I mean, I'm not a helicopter.
Naomi crashed her helicopter.
Yeah, it crashed.
Yeah, so maybe it's not as easy as it seems. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe they had to get like a big clearing and those are trees there. I don't know.
So that could be it. We don't know. Maybe we'll find out later on.
Uh-huh.
And as far as, you know what, Andy? That was a question I had written down to ask Jorge and I forgot. Being the great investigative reporter.
I know.
I had it written down. I just looked over here at my notes. I said, yep, but we got talking about something else. And
uh-huh. Oh, I'm sorry, Jack.
I forgot. So how does Locke know?
There was a scene
where they were sitting around.
They kind of came into the scene like they were sitting and talking, so maybe that discussion already happened when we came into the scene. I guess we can kind of assume that they were talking about it, you know?
But I apologize. I did have that written down to ask him, and I forgot.
You let me down, Jack.
But you think the younger guy would have remembered?
Oh, you never told me that was one of your questions.
Oh, I apologize.
It's not my fault.
It's not my fault.
All right, let's get. Is it anything else?
I agree with all the calls.
All right, let's go to the next set of calls. Here we got Eric from the Fort, Aaron from North Carolina, Jason from Champaign, and Jenny from Milwaukee. Here we go.
Hey, Jay and Jack, it's Eric from the Fort. It's been a while, but have been on the show a couple times with a few calls that I put in after watching my favorite TV show. But just want to comment on something we saw last night in the premiere, the beginning of the end, and listened through about partway of your podcast that you released or you issued this morning. But some comments about the cabin, Jacob's cabin, where Hurley stumbles upon that and looks in the window, and we see. And I thought the same thing you guys did. We froze it on screen, and we looked, and man, it looked a lot like Christian Shepherd. My wife and I both agreed, but our original theory, our original thought was that the person popping up in the window wasn't Jacob, but it was Locke. That Locke was in the cabin there with Jacob. Jacob looking a little bit like Christian Shepherd, and you know, there's a couple of weird theories there. I mean, obviously, we don't think that Christian Shepherd himself is Jacob, but you know how, you know, in past episodes, Jacob or the island or however you word that tends to appear to certain losties in the form of someone that they knew very well. And And the challenge with this one is that we don't know yet that Hurley had any kind of connection with Christian Shepherd. Why would he see Christian Shepherd in that rocking chair? So, you know, maybe this leads to kind of a theory that Hurley and Christian Shepherd are somehow connected. There's some kind of connection there, some reason why Hurley would recognize Christian Shepherd. And so I don't know if we're going to find that out later this season or sometime later down the road, but just kind of a weird theory. But also that it was Locke who popped up and saw Hurley looking through the window and then came out to find him in the jungle. That's why he heard him yelling and all of those things. So just some things to chew on a little bit. Already looking forward to the next episode, confirmed dead, and excited to see what this season has to offer. Hopefully those writers will get back to work here soon, and we can have a full season to look forward to. Thanks for your show, guys. You guys sound great. Do a great job. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, Jay and Jack. This is Erin from North Carolina. Love you guys and love the podcast. Just got finished watching the season premiere of Lost, and I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. It had everything you want to see in a Lost episode. It had laughter and tears and drama, suspense, action, and much more. I love the fact that they showcased all the Lost season, not just a few like they did in the first few episodes of last season. My theory that I'm calling about is the Oceanic Six are Jack, Kate, Hurley, Claire, Sun, and Jen. That's my crackpot theory, and I'm sticking to it for now. I love the fact that they took the time on this show to showcase the reactions and the fallout from Charlie's death, especially with Hurley and Claire. I thought that was great. Rosie and Bernie were excellent as always, and of course I loved when Rousseau slapped Ben when he called Alex his daughter. That was great. I got a kick out of that. I also loved how the camp split between Jack and Locke, and look forward to the fallout from seeing those two camps split from each other. Also, I'm sure I'm not the first one to point this out, but the actor who plays Jack's dad, Christian Shepherd, John Terry, was listed in the opening credits, and we didn't really see his character anywhere, and so I think that he is the person or thing that Hurley saw in Jacob's cabin. I'm not really sure if he actually is Jacob or not yet, but that's another crackpot theory that I'm sticking to. So I'm so excited. I can't wait for the next episode, and until then, I'm going to keep listening to you guys and hope that you guys do great. Keep up the good work, and namaste. Bye.
So this is Jason in Champaign, and this is my rebuttal to Jack's crazy theory. If indeed the boats are not Penny's boats, as Penny seems to not think they are, then I'm thinking that we'll see Penny eventually finding her way to the island, bringing the likes of Jack and Hurley and whoever else may return. Just my thought on that matter. Talk to you guys later.
Hi, Jay and Jack. This is Jenny from Milwaukee. I'm calling because I have a little theory. When Charlie spoke to Penny Widmore in the Looking Glass Station, he definitely made sure to tell her that they were the survivors of Oceanic Flight 815. However, it seems from this Hurley flash forward that the Oceanic Six have been lying about how many people survived the crash to begin with. So my theory is that somewhere between when the six people got off the island and the events we saw in the Jack flash forward, that Penny Widmore comes looking for the members of the Oceanic Six. I think she would want to try to get some answers about her conversation with Charlie and to learn more about Desmond's whereabouts. It just doesn't seem that after all her investigating and her clue searching that she would forget about such a major clue to where Desmond is. So that's my theory. Thanks for the podcast, and I'm looking forward to the next 7 weeks.
All right. Thank you for those calls.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Oceanic Six. I don't know.
I think that makes sense. With the Sun and Jen, because, you know, Sun's pregnant and Jen go along. Claire.
But why would they lie? Because there's more in the group than just six that stayed with Jack.
What?
There's more than just six people that stayed behind. So why would they lie about the other people?
We don't know how long it is until they do all get off the island. So we don't know what happens to that point. You know what I mean?
Well, maybe Sun doesn't get off the island and she has her baby and dies.
Don't know. So that's what I'm saying. We just don't know. We don't know the timeline from where we are now on the island to when they get off. And, you know, there is the Oceanic Six.
And then going to Jason, his theory against my theory, because I say Hurley has all the money, but Penny has probably more money than Hurley. But I got to give a spoiler out there. Sorry, Jason. Penny gets killed off.
What? That's not a spoiler.
So it doesn't.
You just made that up just to cover your theory. That's disgusting.
No, Penny gets killed off in.
No, I
She's on. Penny's on. Actually, on a boat, and the boat sinks.
That's terrible. You just want to kill off a character just to.
So that's a spoiler out there. Sorry, I ruined it for you guys. So next time you hear about Penny being sunken on a boat and drowning and dying, so. Sorry, Penny.
Guys, don't listen to that. He's just lying. All right. Anything else?
Let's see. Where were we? The cabin.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Christian Shepherd. So we know it's Christian Shepherd.
Uh-huh.
We heard that Jorge said it was John Terry, but he also said that Terry O'Quinn was not in that scene.
Yep, it was a different. It was
a different actor.
Either, Ian Cusack or
yeah, because I thought it might have been Terry Desmond, and he said no. So it's. It doesn't mean that they couldn't make it later on.
Yeah.
But as of now, we're
going
to say no, it's not locked because of the information we got. And let's see. Rosie Bernard, John Terry. Yeah, that's.
Is that okay? All right, Ken. Let's go to the next set of calls here. We got one from Jersey Jim, Joe from Staten Island, another John Doe, and Keith. Here we go.
Hey, Jay and Jack. This is Jim from Jersey. And I'm just going to go ahead and take the name Jersey Jim, unless somebody already has it. Then, I don't know, maybe we can rock, paper, scissors for it or something. But anyway, I have two kind of comments for you. One is when I heard you guys talking about the no smoking sign in the police officer's room where they were questioning Hurley, I really think that was an allusion to the smoke monster. I think that's the only reason that they put that comment on the wall in the police station right around when Hurley sees, the thing turns into the aquarium and he sees the message on the hand and the whole thing. I think that's an allusion to the smoke monster, and I think that's why they put it there. So that's kind of crackpot theory number one. And I think that'll come back, and we'll see a little bit more of that at a future time. Now, my really out there crackpot theory is who's in the coffin. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, and although I don't want this to be the case, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I think Hurley is the one who's in the coffin. And I think that that's why Jack is struggling so much, and that's why Jack really wants to get back to the island. I think in the flash forward we saw this past week, it's becoming clear that Hurley wants to get back to the island. I think Jack made reference to all of Hurley's financial resources. I think if he had those financial resources, he could have done it, but I think something happened. And so Hurley is the one who is actually going to be in the coffin. Again, I don't want that to be the case. I love Jorge. I think he's a great actor. And it probably will take us right up until the very last episode. But that's my crackpot theory. I'm sticking with it. I also think that that's kind of why Kate, when she said, why would I want to come to see? I think that's what she was talking about, essentially. Hurley choosing the kind of quote-unquote wrong side, and she's still kind of holding a grudge. And something happened on the island that, they're obviously feeling guilty about. She doesn't seem to be, but at least Jack and Hurley do. So anyway, that's my crackpot theory, and I'm sticking with it. Thanks for the podcast, and it's Jersey Jim, unless there's another one. Bye.
Hey, Jane, Jack. It's Joe from Staten Island. I had a theory slash question on this scene where they show Hurley looking into the cabin and he sees Jack's father. Could it be possible that the eye he sees is Locke, and that Locke doesn't want Hurley to know that he was in the cabin? And when they show the cabin again, how come the door opened? Was it because Jacob wanted Hurley to come in, or Locke had walked out? And two, my theory is that I think Hurley and the five other survivors, all in time, we will find out that they have seen Jacob, and that was the deal. Jacob let them leave the island if the other ones stayed. So I think in the future episodes, we'll see that Jack had saw Jacob, and that Kate would see Jacob, and that in the coffin, I think it's either Ben or Locke. That's why Jack didn't really care, but was crying at the end. And that's why Kate didn't care. All right, love the show, guys. Talk to you later.
Jane, Jack, how are you? First time caller. Hey, after watching the first episode, me and the wife were talking about who were the final six, or the Oceanic Six, to get off the island, and we know three of them already. And she mentioned that Desmond had a flashback one time of Claire getting on the helicopter, so it's pretty strong that she's one of the six. And so that leaves us two to find out, but so I'll give you guys a call. I'm a big fan, first-time caller. I listen every week to you. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Hello, Jay and Jack. This is Keith from Minnesota. I had two theories that I had since the finale last year, and the season premiere this year actually kind of make me feel a little stronger about them, and I'd like your thoughts on them. The first one was, ever since Jack called, had Naomi's phone and made that call, I can't help but think that these people coming to the island are Dharma itself. The Dharma Initiative, the Dharma Corporation is coming back to take over the island. I don't know if this has been brought up on the podcast before or if you've talked about this, but I don't know your thoughts on that. And then the second one is, and you've got lots of questions about this and theories, but that coffin, I can't help but think that Jack would be the only one to go to a funeral if it was one of the Losties or one of the others. I can't help but think it's someone that hasn't been on the show yet, some character, whether it's one of the people who come and save them, whether it's one of these people on the freighter. I don't know. I can't help but think, though, it might be someone that Jack had a very personal relationship with, that he read the obituary and almost killed himself by jumping off that bridge. So I don't know. Just your thoughts on that would be great. Have a good one. Keep up the podcasting. Love it.
All right. Thank you for those calls.
Okay. Most of those calls center around who's in the coffin, right?
Yes.
Okay. I just thought of something.
Okay.
The people who's they're celebrities. Like when Hurley said, "Don't you know who I am? Don't you know who I am?" And Jack said, "I have to sign autographs," stuff like that. If it was one of the original Oceanic Six that died in the coffin, somebody would show up, because there'd be celebrities. There'd be press there. People there. There'd be. It had to be someone that
it's not within the Oceanic Six.
It could be someone that came off the island.
Uh-huh.
Maybe like Michael, mm-hmm. that they didn't know was on, and maybe he's changed his name or something like that. But it can't be one of the Oceanic Six. So it can't be.
I agree. That's a good point. That's a really good point.
We know it's not Kate or Jack, and we don't know who the other three are.
Uh-huh.
So it has to be someone that was not on the original Oceanic Six.
Yeah.
So I think we can wipe that out.
Okay.
Going to Jersey Jim, the not smoking one. When I first heard that, I said, "That's it." And then Jorge kind of shot that down.
Yep. And he sided with me.
Yeah, because I originally thought the same thing. I said, "Why is that non-smoking on there?" It was
LA.
He goes, "Well, it's LA." So I go, "Well,
hey, but you're right about the picture."
Picture. So I was batting 500. That's not bad. But Jersey Jim, I was right with you in the beginning. I said, "Yeah, that's what it is." But I just dawned on me it can't be one of the original Oceanics. So it can't be Hurley. And whoever the other three are, can't be them. It has to be, could be someone from the island mm-hmm. that got off that we don't know about. Or maybe one of the, it could be a Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wasn't on the Oceanic flight anyway. It could have been, you know, someone like that.
Uh-huh.
Or people have said Ben and other things like that. But it can't be one of the Oceanic Six.
All right.
That's just my theory.
And
I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Anything else you would like to say about the calls?
No, that was it.
Let's get into the last set of calls here. Going from Natalie, Nate, Pete, and the Grizz. Here we go.
Grizz, okay.
See, that'd be really funny if you watched 30 Rock. There's a character on there called Grizz.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. But anyway, here we go.
Hey, Dan, Jack. This is Natalie from Seattle, and I was just listening to your podcast, and it got me thinking about who the sixth person is on Oceanic Six. Because I know, you know, there's obviously Jack and Hurley and Kate. I am making an assumption that Jen and Sun, so that would be five. And I was thinking that Juliet is the other person. And the catch is that obviously she's not going to be on the flight manifest as Juliet. So my guess is that she's going to be Libby. She's going to assume the identity of Libby, and that's how Libby will re-enter the storyline, is through people trying to investigate more about who this Juliet slash Libby person is. And that's my crackpot theory, so I'm not sure if it's going to come out right, but that's what I think. Thanks.
Hey, Jane Jack, this is Nate from Orange County. It's been a long time, but I have been listening to every podcast since the season ended. I think everyone's a little overanalyzing. No, hear me out first. The cabin part, for some reason, when I watch it, I just got that Locke was inside. Everyone's like, oh, who does this eye look like? What is this? You know, I could totally understand that it's Christian Shepherd in there. My friend was talking about how maybe Jacob can use other people's bodies to represent himself, and guess whose body was missing in the coffin? Jack's dad. So, but I really do think that everyone's like freaking out about the fact that we don't know who was the second person, and to me it was really obvious that Locke was inside. You could talk about eye color and whatnot, but the lighting inside was really weird. And I don't know if you guys remember, but I've always talked about, because I'm working to be in the film industry, I'm going to film school right now. We were doing telecine at Match Frame, which is in Burbank, which is where a lot of big studios do telecine, where they digitize footage from film. And what you can do during the telecine process is color correct. You don't have to do it digitally, you do it organically. And the coolest part is how much you can manipulate something to look dark or light or a little more orangish and a little different, you know, and it's really easy for them to just make this thing creepier color-wise and just import it that way, or even later on do it digitally. So my point is that we're paying a little too much attention to the fact that maybe this isn't exactly Locke's eye color, because they really could have screwed with it to make that cabin look, because that cabin has such a high contrast. That's what made it look so creepy. So I really think everyone's overanalyzing. To me, it's really obvious, you know, the door opens, Hurley falls, you know, or then the cabin suddenly disappears, and then Locke is there. I think Locke was chilling in the cabin with Jacob. So that's my reasoning, my theory. And, yeah, great podcast, guys. I'm very excited to be back with the season. All right, I'll probably call again later for the week for another theory. Bye.
Hey, Jane Jack, this is Pete from Niagara Falls. Just listened to your podcast, and I got a few ideas of my own. My first one is that the two of the people from the Oceanic Six were Michael and Walt. I thought this mainly because when Hurley was saying that he didn't know Anna Lucia, and I got to thinking why he would say this. The only reason I can think of is that maybe Michael and Walt were two of the people that got off. And if that's true, Hurley probably wouldn't want to incriminate them, because maybe something happens during the rest of the season that changes their mind about Michael. The other thing I was going to talk about was the possibility that maybe the reason that they didn't want to talk to anybody was that maybe they killed the people on the boat that rescued them, or the so-called rescuers, the ones that may have been not who they claim to be. And maybe they didn't exactly get along, which kind of is what they're saying is going to happen. If that's true, they hijacked a helicopter that was left on the boat or whatever else, but whatever the thing may be, maybe they want to get away with it. Maybe these people that are trying to find them are trying to figure out exactly what happened. My last idea came from when I was doing the Find 815 thing on the internet. And basically when they were talking about the Maxwell Group, and I think this Maxwell Group may have been a competitor with Dharma. If that's true, I think that maybe the person that showed up at the hospital is a representative of the Maxwell Group, and they're trying to figure out exactly where this island is. But whatever the reason may be, they don't want him to, or they don't want them to find out. So I think that's going to be my theory for the season. I don't know if it's going to be true, but, well, that's my idea. Thanks, bye.
What's up, Jay and Jack? This is the Grizz from Northern California. Just calling to say that Steve number two's song, to recap the episode. It sucks. And but the rest of the show was great. But Steve number two, hey man. Appreciate the effort. Just try a little harder next time. Maybe have some beats in the back. Alright guys, love the show. I'll probably come back with a theory sometime. But until then, the Grizz is out.
Alright, so thank you for those calls.
The Grizz is actually Simon Cowell.
I guess so. It's a little harsh, the Grizz, but
well, you know what? You got to be honest sometimes. You know,
I guess so.
Like Simon is always honest and you know, tells people how he thinks.
Poor John Doe number two. We worked hard on that.
Yeah, I thought so. I'm sorry. Right. Your song was horrible.
All right.
Just atrocious. So the lock theory, I think, is being shot down.
Yes.
I think everyone out there, it's a lock. As of now.
As of now, it's shot down.
It's shot down. Like Nate had some good, you know, you could have done some different work with the eye color and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now we find out it wasn't Terry O'Quinn.
Nope.
So, but they could have been, you know, he was chilling with Jacob. Maybe they're sharing a Fresca. Something. What do you think?
Okay,
what
sure.
What do you think? It's in there like, hey, Jacob, how about a Fresca?
That's more your generation than my generation.
I know. But, you know, think Caddyshack and you'll...
Yeah, okay.
Okay, the Oceanic Six. That,
mm-hmm.
Is it going to be Michael and Walt? Are they going to show up?
I guess maybe.
And then
it could really be anybody if you think about it, because it could be any of those people.
And then Juliet... pretending to be Libby.
That's cool. I like
that.
The
only problem is, why would she have to do that? Why would she have to?
Because she wasn't on the plane. If she was going to make herself like she was one of the survivors of the plane crash.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Well, she'd be Libby because Libby did have blonde hair, but she's taller than Libby, though.
I guess. I don't.
I think she's.
I never had him like side by side, so I don't know.
Okay.
I never did a height comparison.
Well, she was on The View. Elizabeth Mitchell was on The View the other day, and she's rather tall.
Okay.
So. Not that it's a bad thing.
Okay.
And I had a theory I was working on that I thought Big Mike might be an investigating, you know, analyst. His partner might investigate, start looking into what's going on with the
Oceanic. That was probably the idea that was lost on
Thursday's
episode.
Maybe it's a good thing it was lost, but part where we had technical difficulties. That's why I was thinking, you know, Big Mike might play a bigger role in this, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But anyway, I think the lock theory for now, I think we can put it to rest.
Okay. All right. I think now it's time for the listener theory of the week. So let me get the drum roll ready. Here we go for first listener theory of the week and forever, the LTOTW.
That's right. The LTOT.
So let's let it take it away. Here we go.
Hi, Jay and Jack. This is Connie in Alaska, where it's currently below zero. Anyway, want to say at the beginning, I love your new website design, and I have taken the survey. So anyway, on to my theory. What if it's possible, I was thinking about how Charlie appeared to Hurley, and what if it is possible for people to be dead on the island, but alive in another timeline, and somehow there's a property of the island, or there's some technology that there's a group of people that know, maybe Charles Widmore, maybe Richard Alpert's group, I don't know, but allows you to travel from one timeline to the next, even if you might be dead in one. So Charlie died in island time, but he's alive in another timeline and was able to be retrieved from that timeline and be sent back to Hurley to give the message that he has to go back. And I haven't really thought this through to the end, but having Jack and Kate and Hurley and the other Losties going back to the island somehow have to put everything right. But I just was intrigued with this idea of multiple timelines and being able to be dead in one and alive in another. And the big secret is that you can travel between timelines even if you're dead there. And that would explain, you know, some things like, you know, how is Richard Alpert there looking young all the time? You know, how do they get back and forth to the island so fast? You know, they're traveling across timelines. Anyway, that's just one theory. You know, there'll be more. So you guys do a great job. Love you both. Bye.
Thank you. Congratulations.
I like it. That would explain Richard Alpert.
Yeah.
How he looks so young all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I like
his oil of Olay.
It'll help you look younger, too. As far as, you know, she's in Alaska and it's below zero.
Uh-huh.
That's horrible because I'm wearing shorts and a t-shirt right now. So
way to rub it in her face. So anyway, congratulations, Connie. Listener theory
of the week. Would explain a lot.
Yeah, I like it. It's very out there, but it's very lost.
That's what makes a theory great.
All right, Jack, are you ready to close out the show?
I am so ready.
All right, here we go. All right, guys, so that is our show for this Monday.
I got a couple things.
Okay.
Can I go ahead?
Go ahead, go.
There is a rumor the strike may end.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does end, loss will come back.
Okay.
And people have said, what are we going to do with the season 4 contest and stuff like that? We got over 530 or 40 entries. What I'm going to do, if the season 4 comes back, past the 8 episodes,
yeah,
I think I talked to you about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take like the top 30 scores.
Okay.
And they're going to compete. I'll come up with another 10 to 15 questions, and they'll compete for the prize at the end.
Okay.
Don't you think that's fair?
Instead
of getting, because that way I can contact the people instead of having a new.
Yeah, exactly.
What will happen is everyone will send in. We'll get people that don't have
to be
qualified.
Too much.
It's just going to be too much. So we'll take the top 30 scores,
okay,
which could be more than 30 people.
Yeah.
There could be multiple.
Yeah, like people with the same amount
of points. So that's what we'll do on the contest. And then also, we've had a lot of people asking us about doing a talk show after the episode podcast.
Uh-huh.
And we just can't do it on Thursday nights. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, can't do it on Friday nights.
And we can't do it on Friday nights because so we think Saturday night is the only night we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to put something on the message board, a little survey if you guys want us to do one.
Yeah.
It might be in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it won't be like every week. Just going to like one-off.
Once in a while, because people say, hey, why don't you do it like the other podcast? And I'm like, well, we just don't really have the time to do
it. Yeah, it's very timely.
But we could do one once in a while, maybe do it on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
And, maybe late enough on the West Coast so it's good, so you guys on the West Coast can.
But, I mean, we'll leave it up to you guys. Just not Thursday or Friday nights, and probably Sundays, because that's when we're doing our Monday show,
right,
too.
Plus, Jay has school during the week, and it's just not going to.
Yeah, that's why we really can't do one consistently. It'd just be like every now and then.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so give us your opinions on our message board.
At
lostpodcast.probewords2.com.
Right. So those are two things we're going with.
Okay. If you'd like to give us a call at 206-309-0311.
Calling times.
Again, it's 206-309-0311. Calling time with your last questions, comments, and or theories. It's great to actually get all the phone calls and listen to everybody's series. It's a lot of fun.
Yes.
So do not hesitate. Call us after the episode tomorrow.
Like I said, you hear a phone call, you go, they're not smoking. Yeah, that's the smoke monster.
Yeah,
and then you get one apart.
Snowballs.
Yeah.
Also, you can send us an email at lostpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, it's lostpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can check out our website at jayandjack.com with all important information related to the show, like our MySpace page. You can check it out there, our listener forum. You can also fill out the Wizard Media survey. Also, you can check out a link to our store. Just everything's there.
Everything. Everything you want. You want to buy apples? You want to buy apples? You can go on there and buy apples.
I wish.
You want to buy oranges? You can buy oranges.
Oh, oranges.
I knew you were thinking the other apple. That's why I said apples. Your mind is a one-track mind when it comes to apples.
Also, check out Colleen actually wrote up a nice new biography for our bio page.
Oh, okay.
On our about page. Checked it out. Put a lot of work into it.
Yeah. I read it. It was pretty nice. She didn't build us up enough.
Huh? No, she didn't. All right. What else?
Hey, we should record two separate endings. Congratulations, New York Giants. Congratulations, New England Patriots.
No,
we don't care.
Don't really care.
Right now, I think I'll say I'm rooting for the Patriots only because of
Junior Seau.
Junior Seau.
I'm rooting for Junior Seau to get a ring.
Yeah.
That's what I'm rooting for.
I like Junior. He has a nice restaurant in San Diego if you've never been there.
He's a true San Diego native.
Yeah, and he still talks about San Diego as being his home.
His home, and Chargers are his home team. But he's got to do what he's got to do. He's got to do.
Even though he made the key tackle that kept the Chargers for probably going to the Super Bowl. Thanks, Junior.
Yeah. He's got to do his job.
You see the thing they had on Junior Seau? He has, like, every interview, he has like a different hat on.
Really?
He has all these different hats.
Well, now, back when they went to the Super Bowl the first time, do you remember the Seau burger that they had at McDonald's?
Yep. I do remember the Seau burger.
That's good.
You know, it's been 181 games since his last Super Bowl.
That he's played in?
Yeah, he's played in 181 games since his last Super Bowl. Or there's been 181 games since the last Super Bowl that he appeared in.
All right, enough about that. We'll see you guys this Thursday.
After we hope is another great episode.
Confirmed dead.
Yes.
Make sure you give us a call with your thoughts
and theories.
That
was nice. Why are you holding your hand that way?
Because I have carpal tunnel syndrome.
You know what? If you didn't spend your whole life texting.
No, it's not from the texting. I've like spent like the past week literally like doing so much stuff on
the
computer.
You have the texting syndrome.
And playing the piano and playing guitar like nonstop.
It's texting.
It's not texting.
It's texting.
You don't use your wrist in texting, you dummy.
You do.
Use your hands, your fingers.
And that, the tension at the
end. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.